If you enjoy the FitCast and you can help support us going forward, please go to thefitcast.com and click on one of the donation tabs on the website. Via PayPal, you can do a one-time donation or set up a recurring donation to help support the show. The show does take a considerable amount of time to produce, and obviously there's also costs with running the website and getting the episodes to you via iTunes or onto your favorite device for listening to them. If you can, if you're in the position to do so, go to thefitcast.com, click on one of those donation tabs, and please make a donation. Thank you. Well, welcome to the FitCast. This is episode number 294. I am Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have on the show, I mean, it's about time, Charlie Weingroff. Charlie, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Kevin. 295 times, and I'm finally on, huh? I'm moving up in the world here, and we'll see if we have a good time here. I imagine with your thing here, maybe there's some folks that haven't heard me before, or maybe have heard certain things about me. Maybe we'll have a good time with some of that, and maybe we'll see things might not always be what they appear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen you talk a bunch of times now, and you've obviously had you're coming out with your real big second big DVD project, which we're going to be talking about in a little bit. But for people that haven't really checked out your stuff yet, can you just talk a little bit about yourself and also really about the lateralization and regression system?
Well, talk about myself a little bit. No, I cannot do that. I consider myself a strength coach that knows how to deal with pain and serious dysfunction. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been a physical therapist for now, call it 15 years. Mm-hmm. I've been a certified athletic trainer for 17. I've been very blessed that the type of workplaces that I've had in professional sports and other opportunities to be mentored have given me this, what I see as an ability to look at things from a physiotherapist and a rehab perspective and a strength coach and look at it from a fitness perspective and everything in between. I imagine there's a lot of people better than me at each end. But I'm very excited about some of the compliments that people might give me. Mm-hmm. That I'm one of the folks that can really be in a conversation along the whole spectrum. And so that's how I look at things. I feel like I have this view that there is no difference of what a physical therapist does and what a strength and conditioning coach or a personal trainer or mm-hmm. sports scientist. I think we're all the same. I think we're all the picture is all the same. It's almost like a big black and white picture, and we might all have different types of paint, but if we all have the laws of the body are all the same for all the different practitioners. And there might be sometimes, and this is some of the things that I say might sound a little bit militant in terms of ethos, mm-hmm. but in the Marine Corps, everybody gets to lead at some point. There's somebody who's ultimately in charge. There's somebody who's ultimately going to take the fall if things don't work out right. And even that might change at certain times, but everybody's still looking at the same mission, mm-hmm. and the goal is common. So when we look at – we might all do different things. But this is just how I look at it. So when we look at the rehab process, if there's any kind of avenue or window for fitness, I think it should be exploited. And a lot of times that in itself is better, quote unquote, rehabilitation than what maybe commercial PTs and chiros are doing. At the same time, when we look at fitness, we've got to honor some of the things that we do that just they always have a cost. Mm-hmm. So just basic allostasis works, and because we use a lot of neurological stressors in the rehab process, but when we use physiological stressors in the training, in the fitness process, there comes a cost to that. And if we keep adding up that cost, even though we might be getting stronger, we might be getting more fit, we might be practicing our technical skills, that could put us closer to breaking to stress. So that's the same process that I've brought to a lot of these commercial projects that I've done. I think everything is the same. I don't care where you went to school. I care about what you know, and I care about what you do. Obviously, I think that thought process breeds a little bit then of the trainer who doesn't want to refer anybody out or doesn't have a good referral source. I think both of those situations are total bullshit. I think they wind up going to certain courses, myself included, and all of a sudden they think they can become a PT in a two-day course. And I think that's pretty reprehensible. That doesn't mean that you're not involved in this whole training equals rehab process. But it works the other way too. You've got these folks that are real good at manual therapy, real good at smashing spines and dropping needles and getting you to breathe better. They couldn't deadlift their way out of a paper bag. So I looked at this second project as a way to make sure that my message of training equals rehab was really clear. Because right now, as we're saying, it's clear. But, I mean, as we well know, you can write a blog 4 years ago and people still holding you to 13 minutes of reading. So I am allowed to change my mind. I am allowed to refine my message. And I don't have to write a blog to tell you about it. So I felt like I wanted to do another project. I'm really trying to follow closely Coach Boyle's many of his mentorships, you know, that he's provided for me. So when he feels that he has enough information to come out with another functional strength coach, well, then that's when I'm going to come out with another DVD. And it took about three and a half years for me to feel good that I didn't duplicate, because there's a lot of stuff that I still believe very strongly, the whole joint by joint and a lot of the SFMA. I still do that like the exact same way that I would do it. Maybe got some different exercises, but there's a lot of other thoughts and a lot of other things that I wanted to convey getting closer to fitness in this DVD, because I didn't want to empower people to think they could become a PT. So that's really what I represent. And then this new DVD really tries to put a practical nature to this message in terms of the titles, lateralizations and regressions. And I think with all the advent of lots of, you know, corrective exercise stuff and things where we're almost like looking at policing perfection, as my other mentor, Greg Cook, would say, and we don't need to have this perfect movement competency. Like, we just need to be good enough to get into the right positions to absorb and adapt to stress. That's how we don't break. That's how we become more fit. So what are those joint positions? Like, what do you believe in? It's almost taking like a business attitude to training. Okay, what are your core beliefs? What when Kevin comes to me and tells me what he wants to do, then I should know very quickly, okay, this is what this program is going to look like. Well, Charlie, how can you do that? You don't know anything about them. I want you to start at the finish. And I think when we start at the finish, we're going to be closer to the finish than if we start with all our testing. I think people build programs off of their testing. I want you to already know what the best ass-kicking program is, and if you can't do it, you'll either lateralize some of your choices or you'll regress some of your choices. So this is semantics. This is just my way of trying to illustrate how I think, and it's nothing more than that, Kevin. It's just how I think. And what I want to suggest is if – let's say I'm a training a sprinter, and I believe that the deadlift is a major part of it. And I believe that it's going off the floor, and I believe that it's going off the floor with an angled tibia. I'm just doing almost how I would set up for an Olympic lift. So there's certain things that I feel like I need in order to just be a coach, where I can just worry about programming. I can just worry about motivation. I don't have to worry about movement competency. Well, that's pretty easy. That's my FMS. And if I've got two in my active straight leg raise, I believe I'll get the joint position to get down to the floor. If I have a two in the deep squat and I have ankle mobility, I believe I'll get down there and be able to get into the right position to pull. If I've got a two in trunk stability push-up, and even if I have a one, I could probably bend that a little bit if I'm a really good coach. Those are the things that I feel like I need. Obviously, I'm going to have some kind of test for the individual strength. I'm not going to put a string bean up there and put four wheels on the bar. I'm also not going to do one rep every 15 seconds for somebody that can't run a 10-minute mile. So we're going to look at movement, and we're going to look at output. And then we're also maybe going to look at some kind of readiness measure. You know, maybe it's their breathing pattern, which is some kind of measure of autonomic function. Maybe it's using technology. Maybe it's doing a vertical jump test I use the drift test in OptiGate to set us up for the week. So you see, I already decided I'm gonna do the deadlift. I know what I need from movement. I know what I need from output, and I know what I need from readiness. then I go backwards. Because if I don't have it, what if I don't have ankle mobility? Well, what? I'm fucked. I don't know what to do now. I can't deadlift. Because if I put that person into the position to deadlift where I'm just being a coach, then I'm going to fail. The person's going to get dumped out in front. They're going to arch hard. Their neck's going to be in the next county, all because they can't get down to the floor. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just going to lateralize that movement into a rack pull or something else. Maybe I'll lift I'll switch to a sumo deadlift. Perhaps something that doesn't need me to require ankle mobility. So this is a lateralization away from your best program. So you believe in the deadlift off the floor, and that is the answer. That's for you as a coach or a therapist to decide. But then you can't always do that. So how do you figure out something else that still gets you the physiological qualities that you're trying to train, whether it's weight loss, aesthetics, or posterior chain, whatever the deadlift brings to the table? And there's plenty of lateralizations, and there's going to be a lateralization off every type of limitation that the person presents with. Because if you did believe that doing one deadlift every 15 seconds was the answer, you're not going to be able to do that when the person isn't fit. You've got to lateralize out of the deadlift, and you've got to regress as well. The regression likely isn't fitness, but it's going to fill in the blanks for what they need. And after a certain time, you've kept up fitness, you've done your regression, now maybe they do have the ankle mobility, and you're done. So that's a very easy, banal example. Mm-hmm. But that was the biggest piece that I tried to come across from this, and there's plenty of other things in the DVD. We'll talk about them. We'll talk about whatever you want. But I think that the whole idea of lateralizations and regressions is that if we start with our program, you can go all the way back to mobilizing someone's L5-S1 with a PA glide. To me, that might be the regression from a deadlift. That's how I think. The only reason I'm going to do manual therapy, the only doing needles, the only reason I do reflex locomotion, the only reason I put somebody on their back and tell them to breathe is so I can get them into the positions to absorb and adapt to stress and bring the heat. And that to me is not really negotiable. I think if we have pain or if we have serious dysfunction, we have adapted or even broken to stress. And if we have negatively adapted or we've compensated in a negative fashion to stress, that means then that there was something in that whole process that needed to be more resilient. We needed a different path. And to me, that's just training. And to suggest that we just rehab people and they're good and they don't want it. They're not here to train. No, I only treat the pain. You're not, I mean, just because you only do that part isn't the problem. The problem is this confirmational message that this is all you need to do. And we must train so that we're resilient to stress. And what does training mean? It can be millions and millions of different things, but this is the message that you're asking about in terms of lateralizations and regressions.
So, again, one of the big things when you come and speak at MBSC or I see you present at a seminar, one of the great things about your presentations of late is that is the practicality, like you're able to kind of break it down, because whether it's at a seminar or the people listening to this, there's usually a wide demographic that is listening to you, and same thing. I kind of going off that, I want to ask you about your background just a little bit more, because you do have obviously experience with FMS, SFMA, obviously in the DNS stuff, which is really, really cool. So I was just wondering if you could talk just about that and how all this stuff kind of fits into what you're talking about.
These are all like the systematic approach into which I begin to make decisions about movement. Mm-hmm. So that's I'm trying to funnel a little bit of an answer because there's a lot more to what I do than FMS, SFMA, and DNS.
Yeah.
But because there are commercial models, they're to me, everything that I do from a movement perspective happens underneath the FMS and SFMA. Mm-hmm. And I think the functional movement system is this terribly, terribly misunderstood and attacked and vilified. Most of the time when people say these things, they're actually right, except the system never made these claims. And these aren't limitations of the system. It's people that want the system or expect the system to be something else. Mm-hmm. So I might use what I have learned from DNS, whether it's DNS principles or actually DNS methods, to improve movement that I see requires adjustment to get in the right positions to absorb and adapt to stress from the FMS or the SFMA. Mm-hmm. So I it's almost like very hard for me to answer questions like that become specific. I have to like ask a question like, okay, what's your active straight leg raise mm-hmm. or where's your DNs on your SFMA? So I don't do the evaluations per se that I've learned in DNS, because when you do the breakouts in the SFMA or the deeper screens in the FMS, those like those positions are literally the same exact positions that you see from DNS, because everybody's ultimately influenced by a lot of the same people, namely Vladimir Yanda. Mm-hmm. So those two commercial models that you asked about. So that's putting those two together. It's not that one is better than the other. I just wish that when people studied or evaluated critically or just socially the functional movement system, you can do whatever you want. This is just a report card. And that report card is based on getting your body into the right positions, both mechanically and neurologically, to absorb and adapt to stress. And I think one of the things we talked about last Thursday, I said like, because you know, research is going to be whatever research is. I don't think people are just writing up trumped up research. They're just asking the wrong questions, or maybe they're asking the right questions to fill their individual agenda. Mm-hmm. But I'll say this: we know that you need your femoral head to slide and roll arthrokinematically into the pelvis when you get back into a deadlift, you get back into a kettlebell swing, you get back into the first pull. That's no one would argue with that. That's there. And I can pick anything in any movement. So if you didn't have the ability arthrokinematically for your femoral head to roll out the back a little bit and put that tension through the posterior hip capsule and proximal hamstrings, if you couldn't do that, but you told somebody to go deadlift anyway, that to me sounds like an injury risk. Would you agree? So instead of saying, well, it's not an injury risk, well, because it's such a qualitative and like pick your own adventure type of model mm-hmm. that it's very, very challenging to research in anything above case studies. And case studies don't hold any water in literature as level five types of studies. My point is that I don't want to use the FMS and the SFMA to tell me if my program is good or not to start. And if it's not, then I've got to pick something else while I work on those limitations. That's all the FMS is, nothing more, nothing less. It's a snapshot, it's a commentary on if my body can get in the right positions to absorb and adapt to stress. And the top tier of the SFMA has the breakouts. The FMS has the deeper screens. And just because you see something like a one or an asymmetry, it's not like It's not a blinking red. It's actually a blinking yellow. You mm-hmm. look further and you might find that those tests, because they're so discriminatory, were just a red herring, you know, where the person has a one on active straight leg raise, but they can still touch their toes. If they can still touch their toes, then you should be able to coach their ability to keep that spine long. Now, I'm not telling everybody to go deadlift even when you have ones, mm-hmm. but I think you're closer to deadlift when you have a one on the active straight leg raise. And you do have the ability to touch your toes. That's a soft score, but it's a one. So you know we're asking the wrong questions. We should be looking at different things. But now, if I do want to take somebody from a one to a two, I believe I have no when I have the time and I have the environment and how to treat someone. So let's say we're out at Nike and we're doing 4 days of a pro camp. What I have learned from DNS in terms of reflex locomotion is the most powerful and least stressful technique that I have. Mm-hmm. There's minimal cost to it. And if it works, which you know I'm not the greatest in the world, but when it works, it obviously looks like magic. It's not. You know, it's just something that is taught and handed down. So it's like I can explain what it is that I'm my intention. But that's where I'll fit DNS in when I need to address a stability and motor control deficit in the FMS or the SFMA. So I hope that's what answered your question.
Absolutely, yeah.
And DNS has much more than reflex locomotion. Mm-hmm. It has its own you know, preferences for active exercises. But the principles is just what every strong and fast and fit person on earth does. Like it's when we look at babies and we look at the joint positions and we look at the autonomic function and the reflexive stability and how it's gained, but also how babies don't have this. Mm-hmm. And we should be blessed that we don't know children that are stricken with these neurological diseases because they don't have the joint mobility. And again, I'm not, obviously, I am not public at all about the individuals that I work with like that, but I actually treat babies. And I won't ever talk about any of the ones that I do. In fact, I'm going to Poland next 2 weeks to study, you know, just traditional, you know, type of patient load for pediatrics. But, you know, learning some of these methods that are complementary to what we learned from Vlaka Vojta in terms of reflex locomotion. So, yeah, and I'm learning that stuff so I can treat babies because it's actually where I film what I believe is a fiduciary responsibility for charity. But I also believe that what I learned from that world is the same thing sprinters do. It's the same thing powerlifters do. DNS made such sense to me, getting that big breath and getting your belly button out and down, because the first time you ever did that, the bar felt real light. And it's really quite consistent with what we learned from Paul Hodges and the folks in Queensland about having the deeper core, inner unit of diaphragm, pelvic floor, multifidus, and transverse abdominis. DNS explains a lot. Now, I believe in the principles lock, stock, and barrel. I think they're a little bit linear sometimes in teaching because they only do what they do. And they believe that if you just move right, then you'll be strong and fit. This is nonsense. I think probably the folks that they see a lot of are all banged up. So, but they've really been overflowing with physical capacity. So by getting a little bit weaker and a little bit less fit, but then moving much more efficiently, you still have an Olympic champion. So I think there's a filter that we need with everything that we learn. Anything that we talk about would probably be much required to just take something from everybody. Mm-hmm. And the best stuff, we'll see a lot of commonalities. And there's tremendous commonalities in DNS and the functional movement system as I see it as a student.
To hit on a couple questions that we got from the audience, we have obviously an audience that is really thirsty for knowledge and are into continuing education and things like that. So, I know you've spoken at Equinox and talking about that crowd that's working in the commercial setting. What do you think are some of the best resources or seminars that people should be checking out to get the most out of their training with their clients?
Oh, gosh, that's a...
I know it's a huge question. I know it's like...
It's a huge question. It's a pretty stupid question. I don't know how to answer. If I knew the person and they described the setting and they described the...
Say it's your fresh guys, you know, right out of college, you know, getting their first, you know, they just got their certification, whether it's their CSCS or their CPT or whatever, and they're just fresh. What's the next step for them? Is it... going in and, you know, checking out an FMS course. What do you recommend for someone that is just like brand new, just thirsty for knowledge?
So you bring up Equinox because, you know, this is probably the, at least in my opinion, the best big box gym in the country.
For sure, yeah.
And but you can be working at Starbucks on Thursday. Hmm. Do EFTI that weekend and you're in the gym on Monday as a level one or a level two, a tier one or tier two trainer. That's not a bad thing. It's just how you get the entry points into the system. Mm-hmm. So somebody starting out, here's how we'll try to answer it.
Yeah.
I got about 10 years on you, you know, with maybe similar generation. Obviously I'm older. You know, when you look at people in their like, you know, middle, late 30s, you know, where did we all start? And like, if we're a strength coach or you're into fitness, like, where did we all start in the late 80s? You know, I remember being 9 years old and lifting weights with my dad downstairs with the sand in the weights and having like some kind of band resisted device and mm-hmm. doing leg extensions. And, you know, you take this thing off and you put it over there. And we read every Joe Weider magazine. And now we look back and it's like, how did I ever read that stuff? But I think, you know, when you just to get started, like, what motivates you? Like, what kind of Like, if you, what kind of trainer do you want to be? Mm-hmm. Do you want to be somebody that is, what do you like, be, what are you good at? And that does, and I don't think that's even isolated to fitness, because when you're talking about working in a commercial setting, sometimes, and I'm very cognizant of this, and I learned this from teaching for Equinox so long now, sometimes you have to be more personal than training. Mm-hmm. And so what kind of trainer do you want to be? I'm going to have to say, like, we got to find some kind of course that helps you understand specific adaptations to impose demand. And what are the kinds of, like, how do you understand physiology to get you fit, you know, to get you to lose weight and to get stronger? I mean, that's pretty much, you know, add lean muscle mass. You know, these are the, what are the main things people want? And now when I say that, you know, we can rack our brain for a minute or two, and like, I don't know what course that is. Yeah, there's this like automatic assumption that we already know, you know, what it takes to get people strong and fit because of what we learned from Joe Weider's magazines and lifting in high school, when we just kind of took the bar and just started to move around athletically with the coach that was looking to grab $4,000 just by monitoring the weight room. Mm-hmm. So I think we need, there's got to be some kind of development of a seminar that just talks about the basics of how do you get people fit.
Yeah.
And this is really where we fall short. And yeah, I think there's a lot of places we can learn how to get strong, and there's no better place to do that than Strong First. If you can leave there realizing that that had nothing to do with the kettlebell, then I think that you would probably have a great opportunity to start there, to learn how to coach key lifts. That and whether it's the Strong First kettlebell, Strong First barbell, or the body weight course, I'd like to put those on the list. Obviously, we got to put the FMS on the list, because if you're the kind of trainer that's going to be seeing people that are banged up, you got to know where to regress and where to lateralize. You got to know where to go hard and where to pull back. But I think the one that's missing is the fitness one, where I think Joel Jameson's got, you know, probably is accessible there. You know, I think we can find some things in a conference format at BSMPG and David Tenney's Sports Science Conference out in Seattle. But those aren't places you can just go, and that's not a place for the new trainer. I think there's a void there in just understanding basic physiology of how to get people fit and strong. But that would be the place to start, and then you scale backwards. Because one of the things that you could the message in lateralizations and regressions, just as a principle, not so much the DVD, is that you don't have to like work on everything. Like you're allowed to do one exercise. Mm-hmm. So if all your body can sustain in terms of absorption and adaptation to stress is one movement, because you don't have the ability to fix all the other stuff or you know, kind of craft a program around it, you only do what you can do. Where can you run those rules, run those algorithms of getting people fit? That's the course that I think people should take. I'm just not sure what it is. I don't know. Do you? I don't know. I don't know where that course is. Wow. So that's and it's not a stupid question. It's just like what I mean is I can't. It's very hard to answer that. If someone asks a question that's not of the same context of how I think of the answer, it becomes. Yeah. Whoever asked that question, thank you for writing in. I hope. Email me. I'll be happy. Tell me more about yourself. I've been doing this a long time now. I answer every single message, even the ones that try to cut my nuts off. So it's I answer every question.
But going off that, you mentioned in the DVD, and I've been able to preview a little bit of it. I haven't gotten through the whole thing, but you definitely in the first couple hours talk a little bit about, you know, the different crowds in the strength and conditioning or the fitness world. You definitely have your crowds that tend to be more on the, like, quote unquote anecdotal side, and then there's the opposite side, which is, you know, evidence based. Like, I want to have some research that shows me that what I'm doing is working. If I can't back it up with evidence, then, you know, it's not something that people should be doing. And I thought you hit on that in a really interesting way in the DVD. So I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about like that whole situation, because I know you've already talked a little bit about it online.
Well, you'll see my voice change a little bit, because it's a very humbling experience. Like I don't make $20 million a year, you know, being one of the Avengers. You know, this is I didn't sign up for this. And I think maybe I'll talk about some things that even – a little bit deeper than was on the DVD.
Yeah.
You know, I think whenever, however long it was, there was like these windows that our community had on the internet to create something. And I think, however many years ago, if you just started becoming prominent and people liked what they heard and you just started to write a lot, the cream kind of rose to the top. That's not a very humble thing to say, and that'll be the last thing I say about myself. My point is that those windows are closed now. And I think there's a lot of jealousy and a lot of envy, which I don't think is the worst thing in the world as long as you put jealousy and envy into a positive funnel to motivate you. But my point is that the only way to kind of break into any of those windows on the internet right now is to either just say the opposite of someone else who you perceive to be successful, or you pull the research card. And I sat next to Greg Rose, and this is another mentor of mine, a great friend. I sat next to Greg Rose, and somebody asked a similar question that a little different context that you asked about, like, all right, what's this whole deal with evidence-based, et cetera. And this is what Greg Rose said, and it's one that I 100% agree with. I think we all have a choice of who we want to be, and it's your choice, and it's your pillow that you sleep on at night that you decide, okay? And what Greg Rose said was your choice is you either be an innovator or you're evidence-based. And that is not a negative statement. That is not like a level A and level B. That's not an A team and B team. Mm-hmm. That's who is it that you want to be? And you always look at these issues of where people take swipes at others. Do you notice it's kind of like it's a little bit of a one-way street? I don't see Gray Cook and Lee Burton just going out on their own and denigrating other models, whether it's in research or on the internet. Mm-hmm. I have never ever written an article or crafted a message unsolicited or in response to somebody else. So I'm cool with that. Like, I get very frustrated when other people craft a negative message. How about coming up with shit on your own? Hmm. What's the best way to become famous? Just start knocking on somebody who's – because now in professional wrestling, it's called giving them the rub. Like, how do you get the mid-card guys up to the main event? Well, when somebody thinks they're ready, they put them into a program with one of the studs, mm-hmm. and it gives them credibility. So I work very hard to not answer these types of things. I fail. But the whole idea of science is very simple. The scientific method is very, very different than what's in the literature. The scientific method is very, very different than to be quote-unquote evidence-based. There are probably three different things. So we are all very scientific, and we all actually use the same standard to be scientific. Science says that we have a question, and you create a hypothesis. And then after that, you go through your investigation. So maybe that's in your training process, etc. And then you look at the results of your – whether you're doing this in a formal study or just doing it in your training on your own, because you are not obliged to do research. That's not your fiduciary responsibility. We have a responsibility to do good work and support our family in the way that you see fit. Once you've got that information, you make a statement. Does that statement hold water? Who decides this? This is what I find so amazing. I saw on Facebook and somebody like, oh yeah, that was a good article, and it was because number one, he had this, he did this. Like, someone else is making the rules. We make the rules for ourselves. Like, who in the hell said that you were the internet police? That is a good blog post, or that's a good program because you have articles to back it up, because you're humble. Since when is being humble part of this, like being a good trainer? And who decides who's humble and who's not? Where I struggle personally is because most people that know me would never say that I'm not humble. I mean, this is amazing to me, because I can prove to myself that I'm humble, because I get upset. Like, I look at myself in the mirror, I'm like, maybe I do suck. Like, maybe these idiots are right. Like, maybe I'm doing something wrong because I care. Like, people that say, oh, I don't really care what they say, that means they really care what they say. I totally care, because we're all like inherently scientific. And just because something's not in the literature doesn't mean that what you're doing is garbage. And you can say like the things that are so esoteric or mysterious, like reflex locomotion. Mm-hmm. Now, there's research and studies that may kind of give you angles to make decisions, but you know, you can't do a double blind study. You can't do RCTs on some of these techniques. It just doesn't work. It's not how research works. And you know, for me, I could have 13 studies to try to defend one thing, where maybe it's this study. Then if I take that result with this one, because research is all very univariant, because it's the best way to have staunch statistics. You don't need statistics to say that what you got it was good. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have enough of an N, or I don't have enough of a body of work for something to even if I was interested in publishing it, doesn't mean it didn't work. And if I want to go on the web and wave a flag that, you know, I was able to solve somebody's whatever by pulling on their toe, you know, like, of course, that's probably ridiculous. But so what? Let them say what they want to say. Why does anyone even care, you know, what this is? Like, why? I don't know why people even – well, that's why I said first. Like, the reason that they care is because they're trying to forge some kind of – whether it's social – or financial role in what our internet community has, and they failed. So the only thing they got left is to try to beat up on other people. So, but the last thing I'll say is evidence-based practice is not just what's in the literature. It's actually a three-pronged approach. It's what's in the literature, of which I value greatly at times. It's also the patient preference, I can kind of extrapolate that into the training world to logistics, you know, in terms of, you know, what is this situation comfortable supporting in terms of things that are reproducible, things that are practical, and then lastly, you know, what do you know how to do, which again is another form of logistics. Mm-hmm. So the research might say pulling on somebody's pinky toe is the best thing. Well, what if socially this little old lady isn't even going to take her shoes off because she's not comfortable with a man pulling on her pinky toe? Does that make you not evidence based? Yeah, but what if you don't know that technique? What if you didn't take that course, and on the pinky toe pulling course, level one? So, I just get frustrated because it's like, who cares? Like, why does anybody even care? Yeah. Well, because that person's not on Perform Better, and he wants to be on Perform Better, and that person, you know, came up at the same time as maybe people that other people came up, and they weren't able to forge this. And this jackass doesn't train anybody, but you know, he wants to take shots at stuff. Yeah, you know, it's like. It's a very humbling process for me. It's not fun. It's not cool. I'm also able to say I look in the mirror and be like, ultimately, I asked for it because, you know, there's a lot of benefits that I'm reaping, and I just hold up my end of the bargain and try to deliver something, you know, inspiring, something educational, something entertaining, because that's my standard. And nobody else decides what someone else's standard is. You know, it's the internet police. And these are all idiots that couldn't do shit. They can't deadlift away out of a paper bag. You got this one fool, you know, putting nationalities to different movements, and this guy's, you know, got one client, and this guy doesn't train anybody, and all he does is say the opposite of somebody else, and it's just very, very frustrating and then of course as soon as this comes out, I'm sure there'll be all sorts of stuff railing on me, and you know what? I got a big back, you know, it'll bounce off. It's not the end of the world. But that's where that whole evidence base and like, because yeah, it's up to the learner. Like, that's what I've tried to do on this DVD. It's what I'm trying to do right now. You decide. You like what Charlie says, you like what someone else says. You pick. And it's like, you're okay. Like, we can talk about football. If you don't like what I do, it's cool. Like, I don't know why it's like this, you know, why this is such a standard. Like, my standard is no better than someone else's. My standard is the best standard for me. And if you ask me for it, then I will be happy to tell you, and I will tell you in a fashion that is very linear on how I think at the moment. Ask me tomorrow, maybe it's different, but it's still going to be a linear fashion at that time. But that's such a – I can't stand it, man. I lose sleep. I do, because I care. And it's like these are people – some of these people you never even met. And not, nonetheless, it's like – yeah, it's like you want to drop them, like you want to throw them down the stairs, and it's so frustrating. But that's the way it is. You ask the question, I gave you an honest answer. You're always going to know it's on my sleeve, and that's hopefully, you know, people see things for what they are and go from there and learn. And you decide what side you'd like to take if you're looking for learning and teaching.
Yeah, man. I guess it's just kind of like the burden that you kind of have to have being the guy at the front of the room, you know, giving the talk.
Yeah, I asked for it. Bring the heat.
On a lighter side of things, you did fit in a really nice Pokemon reference into the DVD. So I'd need to know, how do you know about Pokemon? Are you like, you have like a Game Boy with you or something?
I just told you that I was a pediatric physical therapist. Now look, whether it's what you just said or like people will quote me sometimes. I have absolutely no memory of saying anything Pokemon. So that tells you two things. I got a lot on my mind. And number two, I probably talk about Pokemon very regularly. What did I say?
You know, people carrying, Pokemon colored kettlebells above their head.
Ah, yes, yes. So in between the NBA and the Marine Corps, I built facilities. I lived near where I grew up, and I built facilities for a local hospital. It was like the whole model. This is where a lot of it started, sport in rehab and training, where we were PTs but were able to train people. Mm-hmm. So the first set of kettlebells we got was the vinyl covered from Perform Better. So they all had different colors.
Yeah.
So you have all high school or younger kids, like that was our demographic that we were training a lot of. So everybody, got the, every kid that came in had to be a Pokemon, and then all the different colors were representative of like whoever the most prominent Pokemon was. So you have established quite a direction of questions here when you talk about these scumbags on the internet that, and now you're asking me about Pokemon. So if I remember correctly, the yellow little baby 4 kilo kettlebell was Pikachu. And I don't remember who the red one was. The green one was Blastoise. The silver one was Blastoise. The blue one was Charmander, even though I think he was really purple. I don't know. Black was the cat, I don't even know his name. The bad guy's cat. Man.
That was like,
No, you're lying. You totally know who it is.
No, I'll be real. Like, I watched Pokemon growing up before football practice. Like, talk about like polar opposites. Before football practice, Pee Wee football, Pokemon was just starting in the United States, and I was totally watching that, man. I can't remember though. You're right, he was the bad cat that was with the two other guys in the cartoon, but
yeah, you just went from an emotional roller coaster to asking me about Pokemon.
We gotta lighten it up a little bit. And you're talking to a guy that has recently bought a Pokemon game in the last 5 years, so I'm kind of not I'm not in a great state personally. Okay, we are going to be going on to the next question, but I'd love to ask you about just your work in general with the pediatric audience, because it sounds really interesting.
Well, it's very similar to how I've got experience in training adults and rehabbing adults. I've got experience in training juniors. Bulk of my experience comes from what I've learned from Titleist and then what we've implemented long-term athletic development in Canada basketball and at the Roddick School of Tennis in Texas. So very similarly, the conduit to training juniors is rehabbing or providing services to challenged children and talking about children that have things like cerebral palsy and Down syndrome, muscular dystrophy, et cetera, et cetera. And there was a time, a long time ago, where I actually had to make a decision on whether I was going to take my first job in the NBA or continue to invest in being a pediatric physical therapist. And that was right when I graduated in 1999. And there's very similar rehab schools of thought and ways of learning and ways of treating. Just like we have the neurological issues of a stroke in our adult population, there's a whole world of rehabbing, and it's probably very foreign to those of us that are well steeped in fitness and adult orthopedics and sports rehab. But that's a chunk. I'm not going to say it's a big part, but it's a chunk of what I do in terms of working with children that have these hyper or hypotonic issues. This is where DNS has a major piece, mm-hmm. but nonetheless, that's kind of like where DNS came from in terms of treating neurologically challenged children. So I won't talk about the, because just in my mind, the dignity of these young children is very, very important to me, mm-hmm. but there's a sometimes when we only live in one world, you know, it's sometimes very interesting that there's other things that are out there, and it's something that's very important to me. I don't consider myself an expert. I do think that sometimes people find me because they are familiar with what some of the techniques from Germany and Poland and from Prague, obviously. And you know, I look people in the eye and be like, "This is over my head. I can't do this." And in others, I give it a good ride, and I think the environment that I'm able to provide, as well as a male figure in a lot of these young children's lives, they come from challenged homes as well, and maybe part of, you know, the parents aren't equipped to deal with a special needs child, and sometimes just to be a male influence in some of these kids, just even if it's one time a week or when I was younger and I did it a lot more. It's a piece to the whole puzzle that maybe helps me understand things and also appreciate what's important.
Absolutely. I another quote that really stood out from the talk that you had on the DVD is, I think you were quoting Mike, or talking about what Mike Boyle said once about, training young athletes, not really the same as just training small adults. I was wondering if you could give your thoughts on that a little bit.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with what we just talked about.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I think where, when Coach was coming from with that statement that he made a couple years ago, is that you can't tell a 10-year-old to do, you know, three sets of eight, you know, mm-hmm. split squats. There's a level of and I also think that message came from the level of, you know, what is it that we're trying to accomplish in the private sector with our fitness, and how to. How do we not only set these young people up where gym class may become less and less of a priority in the public schools, and where do we draw the line? So I even know, like, I drew the line at 9 in those few years in between the NBA and the Marine Corps, where we wouldn't see any. I thought it was babysitting, mm-hmm. and now after I got exposed to Esteban Bali's work and Titleist's Horseman of Ernst Zwick and Milo and. You know, things that Greg Rose was talking about. It's like, no, it isn't babysitting. And there's actually a highly, highly scientific approach that is very debated, but it's one that you got to run with, just like anything. You got to pick something to believe in, and it's up to you to pick it. Mm-hmm. In terms of these windows of opportunity, in which that if you're measuring young children's growth spurts, there's key windows that if you train a certain quality and ignore others, you have this absolute monster. And when you go back and look at some of the most powerful or fast individuals in the world, you go back, well, what'd you do when you were little? They did it by, like, just by chance. Mm-hmm. And there's key times of looking at chronological age. Obviously, this is how old you are by birth. But there's a difference between chronological age and biological age, because some of my kids in Texas, I had to have a conversation, and I was able to do so in Spanish. I was trying to tell mom that little Billy is, and his name wasn't Billy, but it would have been Guillermo. But I said, he's 12. But I can't have him doing all the other same things as some of the other 12-year-olds, because in my mind, he's really 10 years old. And those 12 years old are really 15-year-olds based on their height and et cetera. And how do you manage these young, you know, these kids are, by like time they're 12 years old, their decision is, do I go pro or do I go to Division I? And finding the right windows based on how tall they are and where their growth spurts are is another very, 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 very important piece to the puzzle, and allowing them to train in a certain environment where I might have used to think it was babysitting, but it's really training these qualities of maybe what Dan John would call a quadrant one program. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just the inherent concurrent model, where the focus is not so much on fitness, like it probably is in circuit training concurrent model, but it's more just on movement literacy and trying to expose these children to as many different movements as possible. And then when you do have, you know, the growth spurts are ready to rock, and then you can start to really deliver some serious training that looks a lot like training adults or some of our you know, stud athletes. But there's these windows. I think Greg Rose is, obviously I'll quote him and tell you that what I think of him, but he had really good analogies where it's like, if you hit one of these windows, so let's say you're genetically gifted, so you're a Chevy Camaro, you're Bumblebee. So you're a pretty hot car. Like you can roll a little bit. You got the best Bumblebee that came off the lot. Mm-hmm. So that's who you are. So you're going to be a good athlete. You're going to be captain of your varsity team. You won't be captain Tom Zerver in baseball like I was, but you're going to be captain wherever you are. And then if you hit one of those windows, you're going to become a Jet. Because you're going to rather have a Jet. You'd rather have a Jet than you'll rather have a Camaro. And if you hit the other window, maybe you'll be a Rocket. And a Rocket is probably a lot better than a Jet. Mm-hmm. And then from my mind, if we look at, and there's obviously an ethical piece to this, there's an offense to it, but if we start to do a lot of the right things that I've learned from DNS and what you learn from Glenn Doman, D-O-M-A-N, in months, maybe month 3 through month 15 or 16, if you hit that window as well, you've got an absolute savage. And that's, there's a way to kind of invest in your college education by following some of these long-term athletic development as well as the neurological or developmental milestones that we should see in children of a very, very young age.
We're coming up on an hour, kind of our time limit for this. I need to ask before we wrap up, though, because you're like one of the guys that if I ever mention like wrestling doesn't give me like a funny face, like what are you talking about? Like, are you mean Stone Cold Steve Austin or something? So for all the WWE fans, or maybe there's some TNA fans out there, maybe some New Japan Pro.
I don't know why
fans.
There would be, but that's okay.
Well, hopefully maybe it's just New Japan. But for those out there, I need to get your perspective on the up and comers. There's lots of new young talent in the WWE. So who do you have your eyes on? Who are you a fan of?
I was actually gonna put this on Facebook today. Roman Reigns Superman punch is one of the best moves out there. He nails that. I don't like how he nails it after getting his ass kicked for 13 minutes, you know, but that's
it's an out of nowhere finisher.
It's like, you know, it's different. It's like you're coming up, like the new guys were like always veterans. Now they're like they're really young rookie guys. Yeah. But like a guy like Cesaro has been around a while. He's just new, you know, to the big show. Mm-hmm. But that's dude, Roman Reigns and all three of the Shield, like that's gonna be like, you know, Rock, Triple H, and Steve Austin in a triple threat match in a few years, and the Dean Ambrose is like, he's a modern day like Roddy Piper. Yeah. I just wish wrestling could have been like it was even 6 or 7 years ago, or even like 10 years ago. It's so frustrating because they get so close to being so awesome and fun to watch. And then they just do something stupid to cheapen it and make it a little, you know, more PG.
Or a little bit too. They went a little mystical recently with Kane starting to come out from under the ring again. But
yeah, it was awful, awful. Like it's awful. Like it didn't even make sense. Like what? Why is he so mad at Daniel Bryan? Like, it doesn't even make sense.
No, it's going to be the they came off such a great WrestleMania. I thought it was really good. And then to the next pay-per-view, Extreme Rules, which was kind of confusing. There wasn't really anything that was really extreme about it. It was just a bunch of regular matches. But
that's what it is.
At least Triple H and Stephanie, they're doing a good job. They are good baddies, so I'll keep tuning in. But
it's what's best for business.
Yeah, for sure. but before we wrap up, you know, obviously charlieweingroff.com is the place where people can, check out your stuff and to see your schedule. But just in the meantime, anything coming up in terms of like talks that people can check out, and also where can people check out the DVD as well?
So over the next couple of weeks, the best place to see me do my thing is at Perform Better. I'll be in Providence, Chicago, and Long Beach. And then nice. A lot of the summer, I'll be in Europe with Canada Basketball. We have our friendly games before the World Championships. I'm trying to think. I don't know that I have anything other scheduled in terms of teaching, other than being available to work with folks at Drive 495 in New York City and at Fit for Life in Marlboro. But people can always find me through my website if they want to set something up. But the big thing that I'm excited about is May 20th. DVD is Lateralizations and Regressions. You'll be able to see a little bit of a countdown at T equals R, spell it all out, .com. And we're going to release that on May 20th. It'll be, it'll have a $197 price tag that'll be good for at least several days. And then the price will get bumped up a little bit. We're going to take a couple months to get it ready for digital download, but that'll be a little ways off. And, just like I said on there, I know you've seen it, a couple people have seen it. This is just how I think. And just because someone else, like, I'm not on this crusade to get people to stop doing crunches, for instance. But if you ask me, I'm going to tell you that you're an idiot to do crunch. But I don't go around like, policing, what other people do or how other people think. This is just how I think. And these are the standards. And the way that I think is very, very difficult to support. Where's the study that says that? There is no study that says that. It's the Journal of Charlie. And if that's not okay, welcome to learning. And I said that a lot. If so-and-so says X and someone else says Y, hold people to a standard to teach you. I'll always explain why I do what I do. I'll explain why I don't do what I don't do. And I'll explain to you why your hero is full of shit. And then I'm going to walk away. And, then you decide. And I would ask you to hold your other person to the dissenting message, hold them to the same standard, and then you decide. And that's all it is. It's just a very humbling process, but I got a big TV at the house. I'm going to watch wrestling every Monday night.
I've talked about it a couple times, but big fan of yours, and every time that you've come out to NBSC, I'm always left with tons of stuff to think about and a lot of stuff to start applying. So, definitely I'm about halfway through and I've been really enjoying the seminar so far. So, definitely people out there, check it out. And, were you able to get Chris Jericho to do like an intro for the video, for the countdown or anything like that?
We have a countdown, but we weren't able to do what I thought we were able to do. So it's definitely got a countdown, but you keep mentioning what we did over at NBSC. So as soon as you're ready, I'm going to put that out on the internet as I think I was real happy with what I did. So we're going to put that out there as a way so people can get some of these questions about what's this DVD all about? What's this title mean? And thank you. Because this has been quite a ride, and I hope I keep delivering a very positive experience for people, so you can say the things that you say and I don't have to hear the other things that other people say. So it's thank you. And I know there's something that I do very whenever I do a course that's maybe 30 people, 40 people, 50 people, I go around, I look everybody in the eye, and I shake their hand and say thank you. And that's something that I do all the time. And I was coached coming up in the NBA, listening to how the players were coached on how to how to deal with fans and whatnot. And it's bizarre to me that some of these things I'm hearkening back on, it's amazing to me how people look at me and I'm just so thankful. And I hope to just continue to deliver something that people are looking for and try to stave off the bad guys.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on, and hopefully we'll get to do another one before 600. If we ever make it that far, but definitely look forward to talking to you down the road. And for the audience out there, as always, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can submit reviews on there. And again, Charlie, thank you so much.
All right, Kevin, we'll talk soon.